second side, continuing the Mishnah that we started on the previous side. Okay, what happens if we have a shofar, nikev, a hole is in it, ustomo, and then he plugged it up? So the answer is, this is not as clear as the others where we said posel, you know, it's no good. Here we say, im akev satakiyo, if as a result of plugging it up, it prevents the true sound of the shofar from coming out, then in that case, puzzle. V'yim lav, but if it doesn't prevent the true sound of the shofar from coming out, then in that case, it is kosher. Okay? Now we have in the Mishnah something that was quoted a couple of pages back at that time, but actually this is the source of it. It says, Hatokei al tzochabor. What happens if a person blows into or within a pit? He blows within a pit. Question is, of course, why is he blowing within a pit? Because presumably there are people inside the pit, okay?
He's blowing the shofar in a pit?
Right. Okay. Gemara later is going to discuss it, and you will see that it depends upon whether there are people inside the pit or not. Okay? So, let's assume right now what the Gemara will discuss later, okay? That here's a person who is blowing the shofar and he's inside the pit, alright? So, olesochadus, or he's doing it in, and we quoted Rashi who said that dus is a cistern. The basic difference between the bor and the dus is the fact that the bor was simply dug, whereas the dus, this was actually like made of masonry, okay? Either one of them, originally the basic purpose was in order to store water, of course, okay? But the construction was different. However, the principle here is exactly the same. Namely, there are people, let's say, inside the dus, or he's inside the dus and he's blowing, okay? He's inside the cistern. Olesocha pitas. Pitas is the largest type of a jug or a barrel that they used in those days. Some of them could be the height of a man. Okay? So, for whatever reason it is, whether they were trying to hide, to play hide and seek, or what it was. But at any rate, he blows inside the pitas. Okay? So, im kol shofar shoma, if the person who heard the sound of the shofar actually heard the sound of the shofar, the real sound coming from the shofar, then yotza, then he has fulfilled his obligation of, you know, hearing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. What? But the im kol habora shema, but if he hears only the echo of the sound, then lo yotza. Then in that case, he does not fulfill the mitzvah of hearing the blowing of the shofar. And now the Mishnah adds another example along the same lines. V'chein, likewise. Let's say a person was walking in back of the shul. Okay, he was walking on Sumner Avenue over here. Okay, except I'm not too sure that you're going to hear what's going on inside. Okay, but you know, in many shuls, particularly, I mean, the older shuls, when it came Rosh Hashanah, it was good and hot. What do? They opened up windows. Okay, so here he is. He's walking behind the shul, or it says, let's say that his house was right next door to the shul, okay? The shomar called shofar, and he heard the sound of the shofar. Oh, call Megillah, or if it was Purim, he heard the reading of the text of the Megillah. So, im kivein libo, here we come to the business of kavona again, right? If he intends thereby to fulfill the mitzvah of hearing the sound of the shofar, then in that case, yotza, he has fulfilled his obligation. V'yim lav, but if not, then lo yotza, he has not fulfilled his obligation. Afal pi shezeh shema v'zeh shema, and even though, in the one case, the person who had the kavana heard it, and the same sound was heard by the person who did not have the kavanah, right? But nevertheless, Ze kiven libo, the one who had the kavana, he wanted to fulfill the obligation, so he fulfills his obligation. Ze lo kiven libo, but the other one did not fulfill his obligation. Here I have to stress, I mean, the fact, the question is, you know, it's asked right at the beginning of the second chapter, particularly in Maseches Brachos, whether mitzvos tichos kavona or not. Do mitzvos require kavona in order to be fulfilled, or do you get credit for a mitzvah even if you do not have the proper kavana? Okay? And the two schools of thought about that. One school of thought is that you must have kavana. There is in connection with, for example, you were studying the Chumash, you were studying Torah, right? And you came across the Shema Yisrael. Okay? So the question is, if you wanted, if you had in mind when you were studying that with this you'll also not only study the Shema Yisrael, but also you're going to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, then in that case is Yotze, right? But if not, then in that case they're not Yotze. This is one opinion. However, there's a contrary opinion which says that mitzvos einon tzrichos kavon, they do not require it. Obviously, the Mishnah over here stresses what? That mitzvos tzrichos kavon. But you have to have the kavon when you do it. Yes?
Is it just for these purposes of the Megillah and the Shofar, or is this considered
in general?
General, right. Taken to mean in general.
Correct. In general, the whole question about kavonah, I mean, look, if you do a good deed, do you get credit for it? Yeah, so you don't get, let's say, the same credit as you get for it if you actually wanted to do it with your whole heart, your whole soul, and your whole might, you understand?
That's what represents
right.
Kavanah.
That is what represents Kavanah.
If you give
exactly.
charity,
right.
somebody, you see someone in the street, you
right.
say,
right.
and you have that response of never, you know.
Right, right.
Hand, yeah.
Right.
But if you give charity, of course, you're afraid that they might attack you if you don't.
Okay, in any case,
you
still, yeah, right.
You know,
I know.
I said, you know, in New York, that they're
I know.
Not, yeah.
I know. It's like these guys who are washing windows, the windshields,
right.
you know, you
yeah,
have to stop.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. You're afraid that they'll do God's what to you.
Which is not
the all right, that's the difference. The point is that you gave charity, so you got a mitzvah about doing it, okay? All right, Tana Rabbanan. So now they go into, since the Mishnah speaks about physical characteristics of a shofar and what either validates it or invalidates it, right? So they say, for example, Oroch v'katzur. Let's say that you had a great long shofar and you decided to shorten it, right? Is it kosher? Yeah. Boris says kosher, okay? Gardo, let's say you scraped it, you know, if you've seen a shofar, then you know that it's the horn of an animal and has, you know, like different membranes, different... So let's say that you scraped it. Ve'amido al gilder, and you come to the basic part, if you wish, the thinnest element within the shofar, right? So in that case, it's kosher. Okay. Tzipehu zahav v'mkona nochas peh, puzzle. And now they decide once and for all that if you decorated it with gold, the place where the mouth rests, then it's puzzle. But shelo v'mkona nochas peh, kosher. But if it's in an area in the shofar where you don't put your mouth, then in that case it's kosher.
Well, that's what we were
right. That's what we said before. Let's say that you decided to put a golden decoration inside the shofar. Don't ask me why, but you know, people had various ideas. They had artistic ideas, right?
Where the opening would be.
Wherever, whether it's... But inside the shofar, they put in gold. So in that case, posel. Mibachutz, if it's on the outside, so, im nishtana kolo mikamo shehoyo, if, as a result of decorating it with gold, the sound of the shofar is changed thereby, then in that case, it's puzzle, it's invalid. The imlav, but if the sound of the shofar is not affected by the decoration, then in that case, kosher. Nikei was a soma. If there was a hole in it, right? And then he plugged it up. So imma akevis hatkiya, if it interferes in any way with the blowing, the sounding of the shofar, then in that case, posel. The imlav, but if not, then in that case, it's kosher. Okay? Notson shofar besoch shofar. Somebody got the bright idea, and he took one shofar, and he put it inside another shofar. Okay? So, the Gemara says over here, im kol penimi shoma, if he heard the sound of the shofar that's with the inside shofar, then he is yotze. Im kol chitzon shoma, but if it's the outer shofar, then lo yotze. In that case, he doesn't fulfill it, because if he did it, then the outside shofar acts sort of like a decoration, so to speak, whereas the genuine shofar is the one on the inside. So if that's the one that you hear, then you would fulfill your obligation. But if not, no. Gerdo, let's say he scraped it, main bimifnim, inside, bimifchutz, or outside, kosher. Gerdo, v'hemidu al gildo, if he scraped it and he got down right to the basic horn element, so to speak, then it's kosher. Hiniyach shofar besoch shofar, if he permitted a shofar to rest inside another shofar, im kol penimi shoma, if he heard that of the inside one, yotza. Im kol chitzon shoma, but if he hears the sound of the outer shofar, lo yotza. Hafocho. Now what if he turned the shofar upside down, v'tokabo, and he blew it? Well, to me, the pshat is, if you take it and you blow it from the big end instead of blowing it from the
right.
Small end.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily what some of the other authorities interpret it, okay?
Well, yeah, that's the way I
interpret it. Yeah. I mean, to me, this is what makes the greatest sense. They say that... Okay,
yeah.
I'll tell you the rest, and I don't understand it myself, okay? There are times when it's beyond me, too, okay? All right, so it says, all right, the first one says, Hafocha v'tokabo, right? If he turned it around and he blew in it, then lo yotza, right? He doesn't fulfill it. As I said, I think it means that he blows from the big end instead of from the little end. But Omer Rav Papa, along comes Rav Papa, and has a different interpretation. He says, lo teimor, don't say that the hafoche kikatzuna elo shechifes nakotzer v'kitzes harochav. He says, don't interpret it as if, let's say, he took the shofar and he turned it inside out like a jacket that could be worn inside or outside. Okay? No, that's not what he means, he says, when it says hafocho, he turned it around. But he says, I understand it to mean as follows. That it means shehirchiv es hakotzer, he took the narrow end and he made it wider, or the kitzer es harochov, he took the wider end and he shortened it. So in that case, he feels that it would be possible. Why? My Tama, he says. For what reason? He says the reason is k'derav masna. Because I say so in accordance with the teaching of Rav Masna, the Omer Rav Masna, as Rav Masna said, Havarto, right, it's written in connection with the Jubilee, says, Havarto shofar trua b'kodesh hashvi. You are to cause the shofar to sound the trua in the seventh month, and the term is Havarto, literally, cause it to pass. Instead of saying, for example, the toccato, let's say, you should blow upon it, but it says vahavarta. So they say, why the difference in the language according to a master, who is quoted over here? The answer is, derech avaraso be'inan. We have to have a shofar which is literally the way it develops through the animal itself. In an animal, a shofar you've seen pictures of horns on an animal. Which end comes first? Obviously, first comes the smaller end, and then gradually the animal grows the larger end. Okay? So that being the case, then the shofar too has to be blown through the short end and let the sound go out through the larger end. Okay, I think we'll call it a night over here at this particular point. Okay, tonight is August the 30th. We are continuing now from where we left off last week. Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Chav Zayin, we're on Omid Beis, and we continue now from the fourth line. The Gemara continues analyzing the Mishnah that we had, which began at the end of the previous side and continued on the top of this page. Okay? So the next phrase that they want to analyze is the phrase that said, Dibek Shivrei Shofaros Posel, that if he glued together broken pieces of a shofar and made it into one shofar, it's no good. It's possible. It's invalid. So now that the Mishnah says that, they want to analyze this too. So it says, Tonu Rabbonim. Sages taught us, and of course, when it says Tonu Rabbonim, it means that they normally bring in a Berais, in other words, a tradition from another source, okay? It says, Hosef Olov Kol Shehu. If a person added something to an existing shofar, Bein b'mino, bein shelo b'mino. Whether he did it by using something which is of the same type of a horn or of a different type, it's possible. It is invalid. It has to be the way it is and not with something added from something else. How about Nikkei versus Somad? What happened if the shofar developed a hole, or he drilled a hole in it, or whatever it is, and then he patched it up? So he says, Beim bimino, beim shelo bimino. Puzzle. Makes no difference what he used for the patching job, whether it is, let's say, like a piece of a shofar, or whether it's something else. In any case, it is puzzle. Okay. However, here, we find that there is a difference of opinion. Because there's one authority, Rabbi Natan Omer. Rabbi Natan comes in and he says, not quite. He says, Bimino, if you patched it up with a similar type of a horn of an animal, then in that particular case, it's kosher. But Shalom Bimino, possible. Okay? But if it's not with that, then in that particular case, it is invalid. So now they ask the following question. They say, Bimino, kosher. We say that, and you maintain then that if he patched it up, of course this is in reference to what Reb Dosson said, right? That if he patched it up with something which is, you know, the horn of another shofar, but it's exactly the same type, and you say it's kosher. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, well, but I put a proviso on it. He says, V'hu shenishtaya rubo. When would I hold on to what Rabbi Natan has to say, that it is a valid patch? It is if we still have the most of the original shofar still there. Good evening, Saul. How are you?
Like three-quarters of the
shofar. Yeah, most of the shofar is there, so that this is only a minor attachment. Okay, this is what
usually
he's saying, right?
Usually you'd probably be talking about if a shofar developed a hole.
Yeah, right, and he wants to pick it up, because the hole is going to affect the sound of the shofar.
Yeah, right.
So that's why he wants to patch it up, right? So again, according to Rabbi Natan, okay, you can patch it up with, you know, another piece of horn which is just like it, okay?
Yeah.
Maybe, let's say, they cut away from the original shofar, you know, during the time that they cleaned it out and so on, but, you know, there was, stuff left over from the original shofar the way it was before they went to work and made it into a shofar, right? So, in that particular case, if you use it, so he says, okay. So Rabbi Yochanan comes along and says, yes, I would accept what Rabbi Natan has to say, but I do make a proviso that at least most of the shofar, the original shofar, has to be there. in order for it to be valid. In other words, if it's only a little hole that's patched up, it wouldn't affect it. But let's say there was a bigger hole or something. So the question is now, what do you have? If you have more of the original shofar left, even after you've patched it up, then in that particular case, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it would be okay. But if there wasn't more of the original shofar there at the time that you put in the patch, then in that particular case, he says, then it wouldn't work.
Somebody had two shofars.
Yeah.
One had the smaller part broken, the other one had the bigger part broken.
Yeah.
And somehow they put the two together.
That's a different thing. That's debate. That's if he put, he glued two shofars together, and we already learned that that is out. Okay.
Right.
That's possible. Right. Okay. All right. So he says, "Well, you start a ruba, right? Must be so niklal." Okay. So from this we derive, he says, the fact that what? This is now Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
He says that as a result we come to the conclusion there should lo be mino, that if he patched it up with, something which is not part of the original shofar material, then in that particular case, afal pisha ishtaya rubo, then even though most of the shofar is still there, most of the original shofar, right, before the patch was put on, nevertheless, it's invalid, puzzle. Okay? So far it seems clear cut. There's no problem about this, right? We understand then that if we, first of all, the original idea is that they rejected it, right? But then we see along came Rabbi Nosson, who says that you are permitted to patch up a hole in the shofar, right? But it has to be bimino. It has to be with its own material or not. Shalom bimino. So along comes Rabbi Yochanan, and he adds that, yes, fine. So you have to do a taka bimino with shofar material, but also you have to make sure that most of the original shofar is still intact at the time when you patch it up. Okay, so this is what it says right now. So now the Gemara continues and says, there are those, however, who give a somewhat different interpretation to it. They say, we said, what? Shalom bimino pasul, right? We said that if it is not of the same original material that the shofar has, then it is pasul. All right, so they will accept that, he says. But Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, v'hu shenifchas rubo. But this is when we say that most of the original shofar is missing. So miklal, if that's the case, you see, this is a different interpretation. So that's the case, it says, miklal d'bimino, that if you patch it up with its original material, right, then hafal pi shenifchas rubo, so even though most of the shofar is no longer there, you have only part of the original shofar, not even half of it, you understand? But nevertheless, it's kosher. In other words, according to the second interpretation of Rabbi Yochanan, so it would imply that it has to be bimino, but the fact that it has to be most of the original shofar is not necessarily so. So, of course, that would be a much more lenient opinion. The question is, however, would it be accepted? So, the answer is that the only halacha that they accept is actually what Rabbi Nosson said, that if you want to patch it up, it has to be patched up with its original material. But presumably, also what Rabbi Yochanan had to say, namely, yeah, but most of the original shofar has to be there, is also a consideration. Hi. Okay. We are now on the Chav Zion, Omid Beis, and we are analyzing the Mishnah that began on the bottom of the previous page and continues on the top of this page, and they go through it now, phrase by phrase, analyzing and either saying good or saying yeah, but, okay. So we've done about the business about Nikate, that if there is a hole in the shofar and you patched it up, whether it would be valid or it wouldn't be valid. Okay. So now they come to another phrase. Okay. Tzipeh ruzahav mibifnim pasul bachutz. Okay. So we say, first of all, let's say the guy decided to decorate his shofar by decorating it with gold. Now, if where did he put the gold? He says, imibifnim, if he stuck the gold inside the shofar, then in that particular case, it's possible. We already learned before it's no good, because obviously it's not going to produce an original shofar sound. It's going to affect it. So that therefore we cannot decorate it by putting gold inside the shofar. Mibachutz. Okay. And what happens if we decorate it with gold on the outside? So, they don't quote over here what we have already learned, namely, it seemed before that they said, you know, Mokim Ba'anochas Piv, right? That in other words, if you decorate it with gold, where you have to blow upon it, but then we rejected that, and we said, no, it's except where you have to blow upon it. But if you want to put gold on the outside and the other place, so it's okay. But now all of a sudden something new is introduced over here, which wasn't mentioned before. And it says as follows. It says, Mibachutz, if you want to decorate it with gold on the outside, Im nishtano kolo v'kemo shehoyo posel, the imlav kosher, which means very simply that if by putting the gold on the outside of the shofar you thereby change the tone of the shofar, then in that case it's invalid. Whereas if the tone of the shofar is not going to be affected in any way, then if you want to decorate it with gold, minvek, you're permitted to do so. Okay. But I'll tell you the truth. I mean, the shofars that we use never have any gold decoration on it.
I think it's unnecessary.
Yeah, but as we saw in the Beis HaMikdash, there they did use. Yeah, they did. Well, you know, there was more
artistic.
Right, artistic and more ceremonious. And as we learned before, they said, as you know, it's the Kovet Yontif. You know, it's in order to bring greater glory to the celebration of Yontif. So that they did in the Beis HaMikdash, but not over here. All right. Now the Gemara continues, and it says, okay, another thing that they mention is Nisdak, if the Torah had a split in it. Okay? So how would that affect it? So he says as follows. Nisdak li orko, if the slit was a length of the shofar, then in that particular case, puzzle. Then in that case, the shofar is invalid. Obviously, it must affect the sound of the shofar, you know, so definitely it's an invalid shofar. What about the rochba? What if the slit were not along the length of it, but it were in the width of the shofar, okay? Remember, you know, that the shofar, you know, let's say it could start out this, but then eventually it's going to look like that, okay? So let's say you go to the width part, and there is a split over there. So it says, Im nishtayer bo shir tekiya, if what you have left is still a sound that sounds like a tekiya is supposed to sound, okay, then in that particular case, it's kosher. The imlav, but if not, puzzle. Now, this would be my interpretation. However, the Gemara has a different twist on this, and it says, what do we mean by the term shir tekiya? So he says, the kama shir tekiya. So how much is what we call a shir tekiya, namely a measure valid enough for producing a tekiya? So he says, it's Peirash Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel came along with the following interpretation. And he said, Kedei sheyochazenu biyodo v'yeiro elechan ulechan. He says that the shiur tekiyo means as follows. It has nothing to do with the sound this time that we're talking about, because we've already learned, you know, that if you do certain things to it to change the sound of a shofar so it doesn't sound like a shofar, then in that particular case it's invalid, right? So far that's what we've learned. Okay. So therefore he gives a different interpretation to shiur tekiyo. What does he say shiur tekiyo is? Shiur tekiyo means that a shofar has to be long enough that you can hold it in your hand and you'll see a space here and a space there. In other words, it has to be long enough, and the interpretation is that it has to be long enough so that you can see a tefach here and a tefach there. The question is, what is a tefach? Because this is a term that they use time and again in making measurements. The answer is, tefach is the length of four fingers. Okay? This is a tefach, the length of four fingers. From here to here, this is a tefach. I don't think so. Yeah, right. We are down towards the bottom of the page. Okay. Did I skip something? You see, because I started with the fourth line, the fourth log line on the page. Okay? And first we spoke about what happens if we glue together pieces of a shofar made into a shofar, and the answer is it's no good. Next thing that they discussed is... did I skip something?
No, you didn't skip.
We were just doing the
Right? Okay, we said that if he put the gold on the inside, it's possible, right? It's an invalid shofar. Then we said in Bachutz, if it is on the outside that he put the gold, so it says in Nishtana Kola Mikmosha Hoyo, if it did not affect the sound of the shofar from the way it was before, right? So we said it's possible, it's invalid. The Yim Lav, and if not, then it's kosher, right? And then the next thing that they discussed is, what if it is slipped, nistak, okay? Right, so nistak liyorko, right, it says... Oh, I did all that before. I'll tell you where we are right now. Okay, we just came to the business about the Kabbalah Shiur Tekiyah, right? And Perish Rab Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Yibishan Gim came up with the following interpretation. It means Kedei Sheyachazena Biyodo, he should be able to hold it with a hand. V'Yeroa Lachan Ulachan, and also a piece of shofar should be visible on this side, you know, where he's holding it. You understand?
Yes.
Beyond where he's holding it on this side, and it should be visible beyond where he's holding it with his hand on the other side. In other words, it has to be at least 1, 2, 3, which is a tefach, right? Of course, people's fingers vary, so there's got to be a little variation. But that's the basic idea of what a tefach is. And there has to be at least a tefach on this side, and at least a tefach on that side. So in other words, it has to be, for it to be a valid shofar, it has to be at least 3 tefachim long. This is what they're saying. Okay?
So where are we now on the
Oh, the top is the Mishnah. The top is the Mishnah.
No, it's
it's repeated.
That whole section, and
yeah, all right. But as I say, the base. Right. Okay. Now, basically, it is because they want to analyze each phrase in the Mishnah, and you know, either they add or subtract to it. Okay. All right. In this case, I mean, you know, they added the concept of Kama Shir Tekiyah, which teaches us, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's interpretation, not what is the, you know, to make a valid sound of the shofar, which we might think would be the first interpretation, but that we've already discussed by saying that if it changes it, Mikamosha Hoya, right, from what it was before, then it's invalid, right? But if it doesn't change it, then it's okay. But then, you know, we come now, and how long must a shofar be in order to render a tekiyah? This is the way I have to understand Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So it's in order to be able that you can hold it with your hand here and still have here and here. Okay? So in that particular case, it means that a shofar has to be at least 3 tefachim long. Okay? Okay. Now we come back to again to the sound of the shofar, okay? And it says Hoyo kolo dak o ove o tzorur, or I would prefer o tzorud, which is another reading that we have. Kosher. Okay. He says, if the sound that comes out of the shofar, when you blow it, is either very thin, you know, high soprano, right? Or there, or let's say it gives a good bass sound, it's thick, you know. Otsorur, which literally means or tied up, which is not that very good. That's why I prefer the word sorud, which is the Hebrew word for horse. Okay, you get a horse sound coming out of it. Of course, H-O-A-R-S-E. Okay. Then in that particular case, it's kosher. The sound that you get is a kosher sound, no matter whether it sounds soprano, bass, or hoarse. Okay. Shekol ha-koyla is kasherin, because any sound that comes out of the shofar is a valid sound, but it is, as far as the shofar is concerned, the shofar. Shokolei la-buha de Shmuel. So they ask the following question now of Shmuel's father. Shmuel, of course, was a very famous Rav. You know, he was the Rav in Popadisa, and he actually was among the generation that studied first in Eretz Yisrael under Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, and then he went and he founded his own yeshiva over there, he and Rav. Rav founded the yeshiva in Sura and Shmuel in Pompadiso or Nahardo. And so, at any rate, but Shmuel was not only a great rabbi in his own right and one of the great authorities, but frankly his father was also a great Rav. So they relate that the question was asked of Shmuel's father. Okay? And they said, Kedacha, let's say that he took a drill and he drilled a hole. Okay? Vitokabo. And then he blew upon it. So it says, Yotza. It is valid. But now the question is, what do you mean drilled a hole? The question is, where is he drilling the hole? So what we have to answer at this particular point is that we're talking about the manufacturing of the shofar. After all, it comes from the animal, right? You come and you take it off the animal, and there's a lot of gook inside over there, okay? It's not clean when you take it off, but there's gook. So what if he drilled a hole in order to try to get through it so that, you know, he could make a sound? So they say, okay, if he did this and he's able to produce a sound of a tekiah, then in that particular case, it is valid. This is what Shmuel's father answered, okay? Pshita, so they say, isn't this obvious? You have to do that with all of them in order to be able to make it into a shofar that you can get a sound of it. So Omar Rabashi, so Rabashi said, no, I don't mean that. I mean shekotcha bezachrusay mahu. What if you came to the original core upon which the shofar is? You know, I'm not a biologist, but from what I understand, okay, the horn grows, you know, out of the head of the animal, okay? So first, apparently, there is like a stub coming out of it. That is what he means by the Zachrus. It sort of reminds the person, you know, of a male organ, okay? That's why he calls it Zachrus, okay? Which means literally masculinity. I mean, that's what Zachrus means, okay? So it's like a protuberance over here, and then the horn grows out of that, okay? So apparently, what they're saying over here particularly is that Rabashi is saying that Shekotcha b'zachruso, let's say he started the drilling, not, you know, where you see, you know, the finer part of the horn, but actually he started drilling over here, whether it would be valid or not, you know, where it's still attached to the animal. Mao de Sema, what if you should say min b'mino chotzeitz, that in this particular case, even though they're of the same species, you know, after all, the zachrus and the horn that's going to be made into a shofar, they're still of the same material, okay? And yet we say that, you know, there is in quotes, it's not exactly the same thing. If by some chance you included some of the Zachrus inside at the time when you drilled a hole, then we should say it should be invalid. So Kamash Malon, therefore we learn that that too would be permitted, even as Shmuel's father interpreted it. Okay. Now the Mishnah continues with something that we've already quoted previously. Because, don't forget, in our discussions, we discover, you know, that the Gemara, they'll quote what happened before, but by the same token, they'll also quote what's 2, 3, 4, 5 pages, 20 pages further on. Because they quote from everywhere, okay? They'll quote you Baraisas from here, they'll quote you Mishnayas from there, and so on and so forth. This is the system that they use. Remember that all this was retained orally for centuries before it was finally written down in the case of the Babylonian Talmud under the editorship of Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who were the among the last of the Amoraim, that is the teachers of the Gemara, right? So this is the way it goes, and people always manage to remember things orally through association. I mean, the whole idea of, you know, that you remember by association, you know, is not a new discovery as far as the Gemara is concerned. It's an old Maisa, you see, okay. So this is the reason why, for example, very often we'll have unrelated statements, but there is a thread that relates them. Namely what? The same author. In order to remember, you know, better orally, so they'll remember 3, 4, 5 statements made by the same person and quote them, even though they're dealing with different subject matters, right? Different inyanim, as we would say in Hebrew, okay? This is the method. And likewise, we already quoted what comes next, but it's perfectly all right. We'll review it again, says the Gemara. Okay. All right. The Mishnah says as follows. Hatakeh l'socha bo, l'socha dus, right? Or l'socha pitas. So the question is, okay, you can take a look over there. Yeah, if you'll take a look on the top of this page, this is where you have the quotation that they're now discussing, okay? You see where it says, line 2 and line 3, right? So the Mishnah said over there that if you blow a horn, if you blow a shofar, excuse me, while you're in the middle of a pit, okay? Or in the middle of a dus, or in the middle of a pitas. Now let me explain what is a dus and what is a pitas. The difference between a bore, a pit, and a dus is that the dus is made of masonry, whereas the pit is simply they dug a hole in it, and sometimes, or very often, they would, let's say, line it with some plaster and so on, and because the major purpose of doing it was really to preserve water. But if you wanted something more sturdy, more elaborate and so on, then they actually would use a mason, send them down over there and use tiles or bricks or whatever it was in order to do a finer job. So one is called simply a bore.
Yeah, that's the pit. Thrown into a
bore. He's called it right, but obviously it wasn't a masonry job. And then the dus is the masonry job, okay? As a matter of fact, the Rashi uses the word cistern in order to describe it, okay? Old French, he calls it a cistern, okay? Now, what is a pitos? Pitos is the largest type of a container that they used in olden times. They had jugs, right? They had pitchers, but this is a great big one. It might even be the size of a man or something like that. I suppose that they used it probably for wholesale storage or something like that, okay? So it's based on a Greek word, pithos, which means that exactly. So, you know, the Mishnah very often will use a current Greek word that everybody understood. Of course, today we have to know what it means. Yes? Right. Right. Yeah. Okay, so now the question that they're going to raise I'll review the Mishnah again. All right, take a look now. Okay, towards the end of line 3 and line 4. It says, Im kol shofar shoma, if he heard actually the sound of a shofar coming from this area, right, then in that particular case, he is yotzi with it. But Im kol habora shoma, if you heard not the original voice, the original sound of the shofar, but you heard instead an echo coming to you, then in that case, lo yotza. Then in that particular case, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of hearing the sound of the shofar. And then to conclude that part over there, and it says, and likewise, if a person passed by behind the shul, or if his house was next door to a shul, and he heard the sound of the shofar, or the sound of the reading of the Megillah, you know, right, you could hear them reading the Megillah inside over there. So, im kivein libay, if he had the kavodah to fulfill the mitzvah of the sounding of the shofar, or the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, that way, yotza. Im lav, but if not, lo yotza. He did not fulfill the mitzvah. And the Mishnah concluded, afal pi shezeh shoma v'zeh shoma, even though in both cases, they heard. In other words, what did they hear? They heard the sound of the shofar, and they also heard something else, right? But nevertheless, okay. The Gemara in Brachos, as I mentioned a little earlier this evening, says, Hoya kore batorah, if a person is reading the Torah, Higiyaz ban ha-mikra, and the time came when he is required to recite the Kriya Shema. Remember, Kriya Shema has a certain time in which you have the obligation, and other times you don't have the obligation. You have an obligation in the morning, you have an obligation at night. But for example, during the day, you don't have the obligation of reading Kriya Shema, okay? Want to study it as a Torah text, fine. But you don't do it in order to fulfill the obligation of saying Kriya Shema, okay? So, at any rate, here you were, right in the middle, studying Torah, im kivein libo, so if you had the intention thereby to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, then yotza, then you have fulfilled it. The im lav, but if you didn't have in mind when you were studying the Torah at that time, then in that case, lo yotza, right? Then you did not fulfill it. My lav isn't the reason being that kivein libe lot says, right, that because he had the intention in his heart to fulfill the mitzvah, and therefore that's the reason why, if kivein libo, then he has fulfilled it, right? So they say, well, no, that's not exactly the situation. It says likros, to read. So he says likros, you're talking about to read. I mean, we read Shema, okay? So Hokokori, he was reading it, right? So they say, okay, I'll give you an instance where you don't fulfill the obligation. It's Bekore Lehagia. If a person is reading a text in the Torah simply because he wants to make sure that the letters were written correctly, that the wording is correctly, but he did not have in mind, in other words, that he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah, in that case he doesn't fulfill it. But if you would take a siddur with the intention that it's time to say Krishna and then your mind wanders, then in that particular case you still have fulfilled the mitzvah of reciting Shema. In that connection, I don't have to tell you, you know, that there are different ways of concentrating on the Shema. One of them is the fact that when you do it, you should recite the Shema with particular attention, that you want to sound each word correctly. Okay? Not just running through the words so it becomes a mishmash. Okay? Others are even more careful that they do it together with the trump that is associated with it. So that's even a higher degree of concentration on the Shema Yisrael. There are also certain letters that the Gemara points out, and that our sages, you know, improved upon, that you should make sure that you sound each one distinctly.
You want that, sorry?
Distinctly.
Right.
Pronounce it distinctly.
Right.
Each letter.
For example, Bechol Levavchem. One ends with a lamin, the other one, begins with a lamin. You shouldn't say Bechol Levavchem. You should say Bechol Levavchem. So, in other words, Don't swallow the words. Don't swallow the words, exactly. Okay. Yeah. All right. Toshma. So now hear the following case, but this will be the last one we'll do tonight. Hoyo verachere besakdes. This we learned in the Mishnah, that if he was going, be walking behind the shul, Oshoyo beses samuchle besakdes, right? Or his house was right next to the shul. The shoma called shofar, and he heard the sound of the shofar, or called Megillah, or the sound of the reading of the Megillah. So im kivein libo yotzo, this is what the Mishnah says. If he had the kavona, then in that particular case he has fulfilled the mitzvah, im lav lo yotzo, right? My love, isn't this the case, im kivein libo yotzeis, that he had the kavona, that he wants to fulfill the mitzvah, is that what we're talking about? So you say, no, it's lo lishmo, no, rather he wants to hear it. So they say, lishmoa, to hear it? Yeah, he heard. But what did he hear? Did he really have the intention of hearing the sound of a shofar? If that's what he heard, then in that particular case, he's fulfilling it. But listen to this. Sobor, what if he simply thinks, chamor bi'almahu, that he's only hearing the braying of a donkey. A donkey makes noise, and remember, we learned the other week that any sound coming from a shofar is a valid sound. It could be high pitched, it could be low pitched, right? So let's say it's a very very bass sound that you get out of the shofar, and it sounds almost like the braying of a donkey. So, if he thought he was hearing a donkey and not listening to the sound of the shofar, then it's not yotze. But if he recognizes the fact that the sound he hears is the sound of a shofar, then in that particular case, he could be yotze.
But it's not logical, though.
Go on.
Well, if he thought he was listening to...
Tonight is the 20th of the month of September, the year 2000. We are continuing now, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Chof Ches, Omid Beis, and we're down on line 12. Okay. Right now, as we see, we are in the whole problem of whether a person is Yotze without Kavanah or not. And we haven't really solved the problem as yet, for the simple reason, as I pointed out, in reality, a person should always have Kavanah whenever he performs a mitzvah. That's the right way. But it boils down to the question whether a person who has no kavanah can also be considered as having fulfilled the mitzvah or not. And here, as we see, there are differences of opinion about that, okay? So therefore, they ask the following question, which means that they ask a question. It says, Niskavein shemeya velo niskavein mashmiya. Very practical question. What would happen if the person who is listening has the kavanah that he wants to be yotze to fulfill the mitzvah of listening to the blowing of the shofar? Right? Good. But below this kavein mashmiya, but the person who is blowing the shofar did not have in mind that he wanted to have somebody else fulfill the mitzvah. He was playing it for his own pleasure, that's all. Okay? Or the opposite situation, mashmiya. Right? The Lord is coming, Shemaya. What would happen if the Mashmiya, in other words, the person who is blowing the shofar, has the Kavanah, he wants to enable everybody to fulfill the mitzvah, but the person who is listening has no intention of fulfilling the mitzvah, for whatever reason it is. As we said before, what if he thinks it's the braying of a donkey, so he's not listening to the shofar, you understand? So in that case, lo yotza. Say that in either case, if one of the two parties, the blower or the listener, does not have the kavanah to fulfill the mitzvah, then in that case, lo yotza. He has not fulfilled the mitzvah. Ad Sheyiskavein shomeya umashmiya. So in other words, what we have to have is kavana on the part of both the person who is listening to the sound of the shofar and also the person who is blowing the shofar. David? No. The month of Elul, it would not apply for the simple reason that we are not blowing it l'shem mitzvah. We're blowing it because the custom is to wake us up to do tshuva. You understand? But not to fulfill the mitzvah that the Torah says that on Rosh Hashanah you have to blow the shofar.
There's no book or nothing.
This only applies to Yom Rosh Hashanah.
Correct, correct. Only to Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. Yes, Beverly.
Are you saying that blowing the shofar shacharis
after is correct, it is. It's a minhag. And for this reason, Erev Rosh Hashanah, we do not blow the shofar. So that we would make a distinction between blowing during the month of Elul as a minhag as compared to Rosh Hashanah itself where it's a mitzvah.
To make shariyum.
Right. Okay. All right. So as I say, here we have a clear definition that both the person blowing the shofar and also the person who is listening to the shofar, they have to have the kabbalah of the yitzhak. This is why sometimes we'll make the announcement before the blowing of the shofar and before we recite the brachas that please have in mind to be yotzei with the blowing of the, you know, with the sound of the shofar, just as the person who is blowing the shofar has in mind that he wants to be able to enable you to fulfill the mitzvah of doing it. Okay, we've been doing it from the pulpit from time to time just before the blowing of the shofar. Okay. All right. So far it seems clear cut. The only trouble is, you know, that they can take a situation and then they debate it again and again. So you have to distinguish between a debate for the sake of trying to understand the situation thoroughly and trying to resolve contradictions from different opinions that you have, as compared to the actual halacha pasuka, you know, to the what is the final decision. The final decision is, as we've indicated, that both have to have the kabbalah in order to fulfill the mitzvah. But the Gemara, as I say, they want to discuss this and try to analyze it to the best of their ability. So, yes.
Did you turn it on?
Yeah, it's on. Yeah, right. Bishlamo niskaven mashmiya velo niskaven shomeya. All right. Let's say this is all right when the Mashmir, in other words, the person blowing the shofar has the kavanah, right? But the person who is listening does not have the kavanah. Why? Kesover chamor bi'albahu. As we said before, because he thinks he's only listening to a donkey that is braying, so therefore he's not yitzhak, right? Elon is kaven shomea. But how about the other situation that you mentioned, where the person wants to hear the blowing of the shofar, but the person blowing the shofar does not have in mind that he wants to enable others to fulfill it? So, what kind of a situation is this? How can you find such a situation? So he says, isn't that the case where we said before, a person is just playing in order to fool around with it? He wants to play a melody on the shofar, but he's not doing it in order to fulfill the mitzvah of blowing shofar. Dilma the common naber nevuche. Maybe all that he's doing is like making barking sounds. Barking sounds, I mean, one opinion is, you know, that he's just making like little grunts on the shofar or something like that, so that it sounds like a dog barking or something like that. Or, as we said, a donkey praying or something. But he's doing it only for his own amusement, and he's not doing it in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Okay. So, Omale Abaye. So, Abaye now asks the following question, and one which we'll discuss the halacha about it. Okay. It says, Elamiyat. If this is the case, he says, Hayoshein Bashmini Basuka Yuka. Hear that? If a person sleeps in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, then he deserves Malkus. In other words, he deserves to be whipped because he has transgressed. The question is, of course, what has he transgressed, first of all? And, okay, the answer is that in Eretz Yisrael, Sukkot is only observed how many days? 7 days. Of course, we also observe Sukkot only 7 days. You have to realize. I mean, when we daven a Sukkot Sikkot davening, for example, you say Yalav Yove and so on and so forth, that's only the first 7 days, okay? From the first day of Sukkot until Hoshana Rabbah, which is the seventh day of Yotam, okay? But in Eretz Yisroel, the next day is, of course, Shmini Atzeres, right? And there's no problem. And therefore, they say, if you're going to be sleeping in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, you are in violation of the fact that the Rebbeinu Shalom said, how many days you should dwell in the Sukkah?
Yeah, sure.
7, right? Shavas Yomim, 7 days. So that, therefore, if you observe Sukkot for an additional day, you are guilty of violating a commandment that we have in the Torah that says, Lo Sosifo, you should not add to the mitzvahs, but observe the mitzvahs as they are. Now, we are, of course, living not in Eretz Yisrael, we live in Golas. So we have a different problem. Our problem is with Shmini Atzeres, that we consider that day simply as like a second day of the seventh day. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, it's just as we observe 2 days Yontif instead of 1 day, right? So we will be observing an additional day because, as we say, we're not sure whether because of the calendar or something like that, you know, that's a suffix, right? Remember that this was based upon the fact that the people of Babylonia and others, you know, they were not altogether sure when the news came to them as to when exactly it would be, you know, when Yom Tov was over, so they observed 2 days Yom Tov, okay? And from that point, as Gemara makes clear in Gemara and Beitza over there, so it says that this became Minhag Avisenu Miodenu, in other words, it became the Minhag of our forefathers to observe 2 days Yom Tov, and so we do it. So that, therefore, the question is whether Shmini Atzeres, besides being Shmini Atzeres, is also like a second day to the seventh day of Sukkot. So that, therefore, based upon that, the Gemara and Sukkot, you know, raised this question because people in Babylonia were already discussing Yod Nein. Do we sleep in the Sukkot? Do we eat in the Sukkot on Shmini Atzeres or not? The prevailing din, or the prevailing halacha, I have to tell you, is that you should eat your meals in the Sukkot on Shmini Atzeres. You should. This is the halacha. But there isn't universal agreement on that. There are those who say, great authorities, who say, what do you mean? How could Shmini Atzeres be Sukkot? Well, it's not. Shmini Atzeres is Sukkot. It's not Sukkot, you understand? So that, therefore, they say, you're not required to eat in the Sukkot on Shmini Atzeres, and you should make a distinction in order to show, you know, that it is no longer Sukkot, but it is Shmini Atzeres. So this is not a clear-cut decision as to what to do. But this is not what the Mishnah is referring to, because the Mishnah, based upon life in Eretz Israel, says that this would be a case of lo sosifu, you should not add to it. Okay. Now, naturally, if you violate a commandment in the Torah, right, and there is a Beis Din that has the authority to administer punishment for violation, so this is what it says, Yilka. In other words, the Beis Din that has this authority has the right, you know, to flog this person for violating the commandment that's clearly stated that only you observe 7 days and not 8 days. Okay.
How many lashes does he get?
Huh? How many lashes? Depends on how much. We know. If you can stand it, you get 39. If you can't stand it, then you get less, depending upon the bucket. This is what we learned in Gemara Marcus, if you remember. Okay? All right. So this is the question that Abaye is asking. In other words, what he wants to know is this such a thing that he deserves to be whipped for that? Maybe it's not such a terrible violation. Maybe we can find some justification. So Omar Lo said to him, Shani Omer mitzvos eno evar aleihem ela bizmana. So he says, well, I'll tell you. when I say we're talking about a violation of mitzvahs, I'm talking about only if it's at the time itself when the mitzvah should be performed and there is a violation of it. But when the mitzvah is, when the time of the mitzvah is gone, then in that case, if you feel like sleeping in the sukkah, then that's your own business, you know what I mean? Then you don't deserve malchus for it. Right. Whatever. Okay. All right.
Some people have rooms added onto their houses and so on for sukkahs.
Yeah. Sure. All right. That's specifically to be able, right?
That's right.
You know, you take off the roof, you open it up and put schach on. It's a perfectly good idea. Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you can afford it, it's a wonderful arrangement. Take my word for it. But not everybody can afford it. Okay. So, as I say, he answered Abaye to say that it all depends upon the time, whether it's the time where the obligation exists or the time to, or the time for the obligation is longer past. Okay. Masa Rab Shemin Baraba. So along comes Rab Shemin Baraba, and he says, "Minayim leKohen Sheela leDuchan." How do we know that if a Kohen goes up to Duchan, Shelo Yomar, he should not say, "Hoil." Inasmuch as the Torah gave me the permission to go and to pronounce a blessing over the people of Israel, so I want to add an additional bracha for myself, not for myself, I don't mean that, for, but I mean, you know, for my own choosing, to add, you know, to what is prescribed in it, right? Kigon, as for example, let's say he wants to, after finishing, you know, saying, you know, the brachas, you know, Yivarechecha, and Yoer, and Yisrael Shem Ponavelecha, and then after that he'll pronounce another bracha upon the people of Israel. For example, Arishem, Lekev, Sechem, Yosef, Aleichem, Kochem, Elok, Piyomim, may God, may the Lord, the God of your fathers, right, increase his blessings unto you, right? Thousandfold, right? Before Echetzchem, and may he bless you, Kashi Adibelachim, his promises, so, you know, it's a beautiful pasuk, right? And so why can't he say this? So the answer is, shouldn't do it. Why not? Talmud Loma, the Torah says, don't do it. Why? Lo sosifu ladavar. You should not add to the things which you are commanded to do. Okay. So, in this particular case, says Rav Shemin, right by Rabba, he says, Kevon de Borich Lei, when he's pronouncing this bracha, Obeleis Bane, the time is already passed. Why? Because when did the time pass for the bracha, you know, the real Birkas Kohanim? The answer is, as soon as he finished, he says, Shalom. He's finished with it, okay? So if he wants to add at this particular point something of his own, not a pasuk to bless the people of Israel, so in that case, how is this any different from where we said that once the time is passed, that you're not in violation? So that therefore this is an answer to the business. If you sleep in the sukkah on the eighth day, are you really in violation? Well, the Mishnah said yes, and you deserve malchus. But the other opinion says, look, the eighth day, you're no longer required, right? And therefore you don't get any malchus, because it's what you're doing is simply your own business. You understand?
But if you were...
Yeah.
That doesn't pertain to eating, is it? Only to sleeping?
Okay, as I said,
it's the same
mitzvah, because if you're in a warm climate, then it's a very nice requirement to also sleep in the sukkah besides eating, because it has to be like, you make it your home, and your house becomes like secondary to it. Yeah.
But my question has to do with the bracha, that you make a bracha
about
Yoshe.
Okay, you asked a very good question. Okay, thank you. The answer is no. And the Gemara is quite clear about this, that even though it says that the mitzvah is for, you know, for people who observe second day yontif, that they should sleep and eat Shmini Atzeres in the sukkah, but nevertheless they're not allowed to make the bracha Leishei Basoka, because it is not a commandment.
It's also
it's not a commandment.
There's also a different minhagim. I remember we used
to... Yeah, there are different minhagim.
We used to
minhagim,
say there's an unshmini atzeres.
As I say, there are different things. As I said, there are already authorities, and very important authorities, who say you don't eat unshmini atzeres in the sukkah in order to make a distinction between sukkahs and this. Our custom over here is, as I say, it's not accepted by everybody. Here we make Kiddush in the sukkah, and then after that we say a little paragraph, say the next thing we should eat in the sukkah shel Yosan, right? And then you go home and you eat a regular meal or something like that. But not everybody adheres to that. A lot of people actually eat all the yontov meals on Shmini Atzeres in the sukkah itself. But definitely it's not the Kiddush of sukkahs, and it's not the Brocha Leishei Basukkah. That's out. There's no question about that. Yes.
Yeah. About the exception or the contrary argument, where it said, look, the time has passed, you can sit in the sukkah. I mean, it seems that the affirmative rule says, in effect, once Sukkot has passed,
right,
you can't add to the mitzvah.
Yeah. Okay.
By sitting there, so
correct.
How can you then turn around and say, well,
okay, all right, so let's make it clear then what we are saying over here, okay? The Mishnah says specifically, do not violate it, the lososifu, right? Lososifu, don't violate it by sitting and eating in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, okay? That's what it says. And not only that, but it goes further and it says, and if you violate this commandment, then you deserve malchus. Okay?
Right.
Along come the authorities, and they say, you don't deserve malchus. But why don't you deserve malchus? Because once, the time of sukkah has passed, the time of the mitzvah, when it has to be performed, then in that particular case, all that you're doing is ad-libbing or something like that, and you don't deserve malchus for that. Yeah.
Yeah. It isn't that the time of Sukkot is passed. The prohibition is in doing something that should only be done in Sukkot on an additional day to Sukkot. In fact, the time of Sukkot is passed doesn't rob that requirement or that precept from force.
Yeah.
But if a bracha is not made on that day,
the weather is very nice, it's a nice warm day, the sun is shining, and you feel, oh boy, I like the outdoors, right? You want to eat. Do you deserve malchus for that? That's the question. Do you deserve malchus for doing it? The answer is no, then you don't deserve malchus, even though the Mishnah says you do deserve it. Okay, that's all. All right? I don't want to give you malchus, for belaboring this point, though. Yeah. Okay. All right. But now, as I say, so they take this business of Pirkas Kohanim. Is that a parallel case, is the question. Okay? That the Kohen comes, and he decides that he's going to add a bracha of his own. And we say, look, the time has already passed, because once he said the regular Birkas Kohanim, and he's finished with the word Shalom, he's finished. So if he wants to say anything after that, okay. Right? So, and that, yet, what did we have? It says, right, Minayim the Kohen, this is what Rav Shimon Abba says, how do we know that if the Kohen decides to say a separate bracha of his own after benching or something like that, after, duchening, that he is violating not to add. You understand? It's a similar thing. It's also a violation of lososifu. Okay? So the katone, right? And we learned the ovar, right? That he's actually transgressed by making this bracha of his own, even though the time has passed, right? So he says, hacha b'mayatskina. So he says, all right, where do we say that he is guilty of violating? It's with the lo siyem. It's where he has not yet completed the prescribed Birkas Kohanim. Right? So they say, Tanya, hey, what do you mean? We have a teaching that says, Siyam. He completed it. So, if that's the case, then it would mean then he completed saying all three, right? Berechecha and Yoeh and Yisod Hashem Polim Elecha, right? He's completed that. So, in that case, it's not violating after that if he had something. So they say, no, let's define what we mean by Siyam. By Siyam we mean, he says, Bracha Achas. In other words, he said one pasuk, then he decides to throw in this extra bracha. You understand? So in that particular case, we say that he's in violation. The Gemara says, wait a minute, where did you get such a thing? It says, what Tanya Siyam called Birchosav. But it says, no, he actually completed all the brachas that he's supposed to say according to the Torah. So it says, Shani Hoch. So, all right, you cannot compare the two cases. It's a different case. Why? Kevon de ilam isrami le sibur achrino holim mevorech. Because in the case of Birkas Kohanim, right, he says, what would happen? He's finished duchening, he's blessed the people, and then all of a sudden along comes another minion, and lo and behold, they say, Cain, you're a Cain. Go up over there and duchen for us. So is he in violation once he has made the Birkas Kohanim for congregation A, for minion A, right? Is he in violation if then minion B, then he goes up again to duchen, you understand? So they say, no, he would not be in violation. Why? Because kula yoma zmanehu. All day long he has the right, if he wants to duchen. Of course, actually, that's not what we do. I mean, but the first case is quite possible.
Well,
yeah, because you can have, let's say, take two shuls, okay? Let's say Kesser and Kadima. Let's say the Kahanim duchen in Kadima, and then Kesser doesn't have a Kohen, but they want the Birkas Kohanim. So, do they have the right to go to Kadima and say, send us a Kohen, let him, even though he's already duchen, to duchen for us too? The answer is yes. Could be done. Okay.
Is this similar to the blowing of the shofar?
Yes.
He's blowing it and doing the mitzvah for the blowing of the shofar, and then he'll go elsewhere?
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Perfectly. Okay. That's perfectly correct. In other words, even though you fulfilled it for yourself, and even though you fulfilled it, let's say, for the shul here,
right.
But if there are other people who have not yet had the opportunity for the fulfillment of the mitzvah, you are permitted to go to blow for them.
So
exactly.
The
right. All right. So now they go into a very technical discussion, which I'll try to explain over here before we get too lost. It says, how do you know that? Do you have some kind of a parallel source that we've already learned? Ditnan. So they say, yeah, we have a Mishnah. This is a Mishnah which speaks in Zvachim, and it's also mentioned there. All right. Hanitonin b'matona achas, shenis arvo b'nitonin matona achas, yinosnu matona achas. Okay. Oy. You know that when we had sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash, so the part of the sacrifice that is called the kapora, in other words, it's the atonement for the person who offers the sacrifice or for the congregation offering the sacrifice, right, is affected by the sprinkling of blood on the altar. Okay? But not every sacrifice had the same law as to how many sprinklings or where the sprinkling has to take place. Okay? For this, you have to really take a look in the Siddur and Ezehu Mekomon, where they speak about the different types of sacrifices, and they also mention how many sprinklings are required and where the sprinklings are required. Okay? For example, the chatos, the sin offering, okay, had to be sprinkled in four different sides of the altar. Okay? Then you had others, as for example the Ola, where it is two sprinklings, but you have to do it on each corner, so that when you do it, actually covering, you know, your blood will be actually on four sides, but only with two sprinklings on the opposite corner. Okay? Then you have the certain sacrifices, such as the Bechor, or the Maaser, or the Korban Pesach, where they simply have one sprinkling of blood, okay, happens to be sort of like halfway or below the halfway mark on the altar. They had a red mark in order to indicate the division. And that, the only requirement there besides the one sprinkling of blood, you know, one spot that you throw against the altar, is that also that the rest of the blood has to be shofech al yesod shamizbeach chitzon. So the Roma usually shamizbeach chitzon. In other words, there is a foundation upon which the altar rests, and it actually had three sides was the foundation. One side did not have a foundation. Okay. So while you could do it on any side, you could not do it on the side which did not have the foundation, because the blood has to be al yesod hamizbeach. Okay. So
Is it a basin for three?
No, the question is what happens over there. At, I said it's a base, not a basin, a base.
So it goes into the ground?
Yeah.
Right. Either it sinks into the ground, or another opinion is that they actually had pipes leading from it.
Somebody
okay.
claims
right.
they have found
yeah.
some years back
yeah.
the pipes or the hollow thing
yeah.
with the blood flew in, and it supposedly flew in the Nahal Kitna or something like this.
Yeah, right. It went into the brook, you see. In other words, it led to the brook. Right. Yeah, yeah. They had plumbing, in other words, in order to take care, because otherwise you would have an excess of blood, and it had to be swept, it had to be kept clean and everything else. So you had different arrangements that were made. To get a better idea, you really have to study like Tomid and Midos and so on, where they have descriptions of the Beis HaMikdosh, what it looked like over here, and what the size and how many steps, and the lishkos that they had over there, in other words, the separate chambers that they had for different purposes and so on, as for example the lishkas hagozis, in other words the chamber of hewn stones, which is where the Sanhedrin met, and other places where they kept animals penned up, and other places where they kept, let's say, the implements that they needed in order to carry out sacrifices.
There's a separate the animals, knives,
things
that
like that, and so on. So, you know, there's a whole description over there, and it's very detailed, and it's important, you know, not
perfect
only from the point of view of knowledge, but even for archaeological
perfect
purposes.
Perfect example of good
yeah.
workflow.
Yeah.
Any office can learn from that.
Workflow.
Any office can learn from that workflow.
Yeah. All right. So now that I've explained something over here, let's get back to the text. So it says, "Hanitonim b'matono achas." All right. You have a sacrifice which requires only one sprinkling, right? Shenisorvu, and then it got mixed up b'nitonim matono achas with another sacrifice, which also requires only one sprinkling. Okay. So, the Mishnah here that they're quoting says, Yenosna matona achas. Okay, so, you, how many sprinklings do you give on the altar? You give only one sprinkling on the altar, not two, even though there are two sacrifices, right? You understand? But because the requirement for each was that there's only be one sprinkling, so therefore the blood got mixed up, and you're permitted to give only one. If you did more than that, then what would we say? You would be so sinful, right? Okay, all right. Now, what would be another case? So they take another case. What if it's matan dalet but matan dalet? In other words, the kind of a sacrifice I said, like the chatos, which requires that it be sprinkled on all four sides of the altar, and it got mixed in with another one which also required the same thing. So the answer is, you know, some matan dalit. Then in that case, again, how many sprinklings do you give?
One for each.
Right, but for each sacrifice, but not separate, just together. You give four sprinklings. But what happens now in the following case? Matan dalet b'matan achas. Where you have a sacrifice which requires four sprinklings, right? And you have another sacrifice which requires only one sprinkling, and what happened? The blood of the two sacrifices became mixed. So the question is, how many sprinklings do you put on the altar? So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says, Yenosnu b'matan dalet. He says you have to then do four. Okay? Four sprinklings. Rabbi Yoshua disagrees with him. He says, Yenosnu b'matan achas. You only put one. Only one sprinkling. So Amalei Rabbi Eliezer, so Rabbi Eliezer argues with Rabbi Yoshua. He says, Harei hu oiver abal tigra. Well, just as we have, not to add, but we also have the opposite. You're not allowed to diminish the mitzvah, right? So he says, look, if instead of four he only does one, then in that case he is violating the law not to diminish what it has to be, right? So I'm on Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua, so Rabbi Yeshua answers him and he says, Harehu over about Tosef. Yeah, but, you know, let's take the other case. He said that one of them requires only one sprinkling, and I say then that you have one sprinkling in Fatik, right? But if you have four, then you're adding to what the other one required, which was only one, right? So Amalei Rabbi Eliezer, so Eliezer answers him and he says, Lo ne'emar about Tosef. He says, when does the commandment not to add apply? Ela kashu bi'atzmo. When it is just it and that's it. So Amalo Rabbi Yeshua, so Rabbi Yeshua said, Lo ne'emar about Tigra, ela kashu bi'atzmo. He says again the same thing. If it's it alone, then in that case you're not allowed. But if it's not it alone, instead you have a mixture already of different things, then you can apply it. V'yod omar Rabbi Yeshua, and furthermore said Rabbi Yeshua, kishalo nesato, if you didn't give any sprinkling, then ovato baltigra. Then in that particular case, you would have violated the law that you should not diminish. In other words, the sacrifice requires at least one sprinkling, right? And if you don't sprinkle the blood of the sacrifice, then in that case you are violating that not to diminish, right? And nor have you, fulfilled any action which has any validity to it. Kishanasata. Okay, and what happens if you sprinkle more than you're supposed to? Avata baltosef, then you did that. Leosisamasa biyodecha. And you did something actual. But Vahohacha, he says, in this particular case, look, what are we talking about? He says, Kaven de Yohiv le matona mi bechor. If, for example, you gave a sprinkling for a bechor, and bechor, remember, requires only one sprinkle, okay? Bechor, remember, is the firstborn animal.
Huh? In a particular place.
Yeah, but we said only one sprinkle on the altar, period.
Right.
That's all. Only one, okay?
So I'm concerned about where
right.
the sprinkling is
yeah.
done.
Yeah.
Because the others are done on the corners.
Yeah, right, but this is only, it's not on the corner. It's done in a spot, okay. But it's not done on the corner, okay? And it's done on only one side and nowhere, not on the four sides, okay? So he says, if you... add the blood of the Bechor, he says, overlays money. The time has already passed for it, and therefore, right, Mikotoni, we learned, the Ova Mishum Baltosif, right? So, and we learned that if the time has passed, then we said he's guilty of violating Baltosif, in other words, not to add, by doing that sprinkling. So he says, Lav Mishum Da Minon, They're not really arguing this case. Why? Because maybe what's going to happen, there's going to be another Bechor in the Beis Hamikdash, right? Ready for sacrifice. So Hadam is So again, he's permitted to do what? He's permitted to sprinkle blood. Why? Because Kula Yoma is money. Because all day long, it's possible for him to offer these sacrifices. So in that case, we cannot argue about time passing, because you know it could be all day long. So, Mimai, maybe we should be of the following opinion. Maybe Rabbi Yoshua feels that mitzvahs over alehen afil shlomizmanon, that mitzvahs, you will violate them even if it's not at the proper time. So he says, anan hochi kamin. So we therefore want to give a taich to what was said before. So Rabbi Shemin bar Abba my tamei. What is the reason of Rab Shemin that Abba says, my tummy, for what reason Shavik Mas Nisa? Why did he reject the Mishnah of Mos Mibaraisa and answer instead his opinion from a Baraisa, which remember is not an official Mishnaic teaching, right? Losim Mas Nisa, why doesn't he rather, you know, base his argument upon what the Mishnah says, right? So Mas Nisa my tummy, so why Taka didn't he give his opinion based upon the Mishnah? Why did he argue with it? It says, "Kevan de ilum isravi lebuch rachina boemazimineh kula yoma." The reason being because you can't argue on the basis that the time has passed, because maybe another bechor would come along, and he has to sprinkle from it on the altar, and it's kula yoma's money, so he has all this time his money. And the Raiso, as far as the Brice is concerned, Name Kevan de Imiswamitsi Burachrina. And then where we were arguing before about the Kohen, he says, maybe there'll be another congregation forming that he has to bench, right? So Hadam Mubarak. So in that case he's permitted to do what? He's permitted to make the bracha Vikas Kolm again. Why? Because Kula Yema's money, they have the whole day that. Okay. The Rav Shemin bar Abba, but how about his point of view? He says, "Hosam leisagi deloy havi hocha." He says, "No, it's not really sufficient. Why? Because iboy mevorech iboy lamivorech." He says, "Because the Kohen, if he feels."